Tuesday, March the 20th, 2012, and the radio program is on the air. It's the nation's most listened to sports talk presentation. It's primetime on the Fan Radio Network on Sirius, Channel 157, and on Sportsnet in high definition. Bob McCowan, Stephen Brunt in our Toronto studios. A little bit later on, Greg Gilhooly, one of the victims of the Graham James sexual abuse situation. James sentenced to 2 years in prison today. Greg will join us on the program. Also, Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette. Now rumors swirling that Patrick Roy has agreed to take over the reins of Les Habitants.
Although he's denied, there are denials coming from Quebec, from Quebec City.
Well, so. And I keep hearing Quebec City is where he's going to be.
Well, that's...
But we'll see.
We'll see.
You had something you wanted?
Well, I was going to say, are you going to... We have those... Though it was in the previous hour. You, when we had Pete Dykowski in here, smartest person in Canada, you had a logic question.
Right.
And I had a trivia question from before. We probably should... Like, I'll give the answer to my trivia question, but...
I will never give the answer to my logic question.
Okay.
You have to figure it out yourself. If you want to, you can email the show. What is it? Primetime at... What? Primetime at sportsnet590.ca. If you want to email your answer or tweet me or whatever.
And if you get it right, you'll tell them they've got it right.
Oh, yeah. For sure, I'll tell you if you got it right.
Okay.
But I'm never giving the answer.
Okay.
Now, your question
trivia question. Muhammad Ali was knocked down
four times
as a professional. Who were the four guys who knocked him down?
I got two of them.
Okay, go ahead.
Wepner.
Chuck Wepner, though that was a trip, of course, but it was ruled a knockdown in the fight, 76.
Correct. And Frazier in the first
71,
Frazier fight.
March 8, 71.
15th round.
Yep.
And that's the only ones I know. And then there was one early in his career.
There's two early in his career, actually.
Oh.
One, you should, Sonny Banks in 62, which
that's
is the very obscure one.
That's the one
but the other one,
I heard of that
you're
going to
kick yourself for the other one, Henry Cooper. First fight, knocked down.
I thought I said Cooper, and
nope.
You said no.
No, you said Burt Cooper.
Oh,
Henry
that's
Cooper.
Not, I knew it. I saw that.
Henry Cooper, when that, no, but that's the famous Angelo Dundee when he was, you know, when they said he cut the glove and he stalled time between rounds. Famous moment.
All right.
But nobody gets Sonny Banks. Although, you know what? I was thinking about this. Trivia's dead now, right? That kind of stuff, because everybody's got their little handheld and they go clickety-click, and it's no fun anymore.
Here's the deputy commissioner of the National Hockey League. Here's our friend Bill Daly.
See, he would have got it.
Did you get that? Did you get all four guys who knocked down Ali Daly?
I actually didn't get them. I got two, but I'm kicking myself. I should have gotten four. I used to be good at that stuff.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
I'll give you the hats one later.
All right.
It's nasty. You'll be.
How are you guys doing?
We're well.
You know, we're just kind of hanging in, you know.
How's the weather in Toronto? Warm?
Oh, it's 80 tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's like stupid. Same in New York, huh?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like 80 tomorrow here.
I know. It's like crazy. So I'm praying for my golf course to open, but they're afraid that there's still another snowstorm coming, but I don't see it. In any event, items on the ice or off the ice, if you will. The Alex Radulov situation is a very interesting one. And interesting from a variety of perspectives. Some have wondered why he's allowed to return and play with Nashville without clearing waivers. Is there precedent for that decision, Bill?
Yeah, I would suggest there's precedent for that decision. It's, you know, ever since the Russians kind of fell out of our player transfer agreement, we've had a handful of players, actually more than a handful, probably somewhere between 15 and 20 players who have gone AWOL on their NHL contract. Sometimes in the context of not wanting to report to an American Hockey League franchise and instead wanting to go back and play professionally in the big league in Russia in violation of their contracts. We've always taken a position, basically with the endorsement of the Players Association, that in those situations, if the club, the NHL club is ever successful in persuading the player to come back, that the purposes of Rule 1323 or Section 1320 of the CBA, 23 of the CBA shouldn't be applied to those players. It's something we've approached the union on repeated occasions, they've been in agreement with that treatment. It's obviously something also we've reported to the clubs on a regular basis. Now, we've never been in a situation where a player of Alex Radulov's skill and profile had to come back, particularly after the trade deadline. So that makes this a little bit unique. But I think in terms of how we've treated those types of players, it's very consistent with how we've done it over time.
Are there other teams, other general managers who have objected in any way, or formally objected to the way you've handled this?
There's been no formal objections. Certainly there were questions that had to be fielded in Florida at our general managers meeting last week. And I think I've talked to a couple of general managers this week on the issue as well. I certainly understand the concerns, and I admire the competitive spirit of our managers. But I think on rules like this, it's not something that you would take a vote on necessarily, because, you know, it might be a lopsided vote for the teams who are competing with Nashville not wanting to get this player back.
Well, yeah.
You know, our view on this, you know, is it's really unfair to penalize Nashville because they're at no fault, through no fault of their own, missing the services of a player they have contractual rights to. The other clubs basically have been getting a benefit of the fact that the player's been gone for 3 years and not helping the Nashville Predators, even though the Nashville Predators have these rights. So it's somewhat disingenuous is not the right word, but it's understandable that competitors would have concerns, but it's also not fair to Nashville to
right.
bar them the services of this player.
With Bill Daly, the NHL's deputy commissioner, before I let Brunt in here quickly, there is some discussion, and I don't know whether it's been confirmed by you or yet or not, I haven't seen that under this deal, he goes back to Russia at the end of the season. In other words, he's only here through the balance of the year. Is that true?
No, at least to my understanding, that's not true. I have no idea what Mr. Radulov's communications with his Russian club may have been, with the Russian league may have been. I can tell you that I did have a conversation with Alex Medvedev yesterday. He confirmed to me that, contrary to the reports that I've been reading on Twitter and the like, that the buyout of the contractual obligation in Russia has been for the balance of his contract, so he does not have a contract for next year. In Russia, that his status within the KHL will be that of a restricted free agent. And quite frankly, his status in the NHL, should he complete the season, will be, and he's tendered a qualifying offer, would be as a restricted free agent as well. I think Mr. Medvedev was softly looking for some commitment either from Nashville or from the league that they would not be seeking an extension of Mr. Radulov's contract, NHL contract, as they're entitled to do. I don't think he's gotten that commitment. As a matter of fact, I can tell you for a fact he hasn't gotten that commitment from us, and I don't think he's gotten that commitment from Nashville
right.
Either. So it's certainly possible that Nashville could look to extend Radulov before the July 1st free agency date.
Or it's possible that Radulov could decide on his own to go back to Russia if
Correct.
He decided, right?
Correct.
You said you were talking to Medvedev. What is that relationship like now between the NHL and the KHL?
How would you
characterize
it? Over the years, I mean, I still think it's fair to say we don't see the world exactly the same way, and we continue to disagree on certain things. And I'm sure the Continental Hockey League would like more interaction, I guess is the right word, with the National Hockey League and our clubs and players than currently exists. But it's certainly a business-like relationship, and you know we were able to have lunch with Mr. Medvedev 2 or 3 weeks ago here in New York, and it's cordial. Again, we don't agree on everything, but we communicate.
With Bill Daly, the NHL's deputy commissioner, on another issue, and we've talked about this a fair bit over the last little while. The Phoenix Coyotes situation has been categorized by the commissioner as, I think, not to misquote him, but I think something to the neighborhood of a work in progress. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I think that's okay. Fair characterization.
Yeah. And he said, you know, we're trying to bring this to a conclusion, and that conclusion could be either A, they stay in Phoenix, or B, they don't stay in Phoenix. And at issue at this point is there a timeline? Is there the thinking has been that this was the year. If it doesn't get done by the end of this season, then the only answer available is really to move the franchise. Do you want to comment on that?
I comment generally on it. I mean, is there a timeline in which a decision has to be made? Obviously. Is that something that we've set with any definiteness? No. And, we continue to try to work to transition ownership in Phoenix. But obviously we haven't gotten to the point where, we're in a position where we, have any kind of agreement with anybody or that we're trying to close a deal. And ultimately, those tough decisions have to be made. So I think the overall kind of assumption that this year is probably the last year in Phoenix, while somewhat premature, I think is certainly something that, I think at some point you have to make a decision, even if it's not your first choice, that, it's not a healthy situation on a continuing basis.
What does it say, Bill? Is there any scenario under which the league would operate the team in Glendale next year?
I never say never. But I think we're certainly proceeding on the assumption that we either get this done or we don't.
And given the potential that even if you find somebody in Phoenix, there's still the potential for legal challenges, the Goldwater Institute still lurking out there, the timeline could get pretty challenging even if you find someone, couldn't it?
It could. It could. I mean, I'm not, I suppose that all depends on what the deal with the city of Glendale is at the end of the day. And I think that would still need to be determined. So whether Goldwater continues to be a risk in this whole scenario is yet to be seen. I think, I think everybody came to the conclusion that the structure that Matt Holzhauser tried to close under was something that Goldwater got involved in and was able to chill the market in such a way that structure wasn't going to work. So I think, the city of Glendale, to the extent it's considered other alternatives, has considered other alternatives that wouldn't incorporate the same structure.
Is there an active three-way conversation among you, Glendale, and a potential buyer, or are you waiting for Glendale and a potential buyer to put something in front of you?
No, I think it's fair to say there's an active three-way conversation.
With Bill Daly. We are led to believe that the city of Quebec has let it be known to the National Hockey League that they are ready, willing, and able to put a franchise back in Quebec City. There's a commitment to construct the new $400 million arena. There is a commitment for, I think, $30 million for the renovation of what is now the Pepsi Center, the former Colisée. Do you have a like situation in Seattle? We've heard a fair bit about Seattle the last little while. But at this point, is there a there, or is there tire kicking, or how would you categorize the interest in a franchise in Seattle?
I'm not sure if I could characterize it precisely. I think there is an interest in a franchise in Seattle. I think there are certain elements. I don't think any situation is exactly alike. So I wouldn't say that the situation in Seattle is exactly comparable to the situation in Quebec. But certainly there's an interest, and certainly there's interested potential owners, and certainly Seattle at some point in the future may be a good possibility for us.
Is there any way, though, that the Key Arena can work as a temporary home for a team, Bill? Because it sounds like there are huge logistical challenges putting an NHL ice surface in there.
The same logistical challenges that we dealt with when we first moved the Coyotes from Winnipeg to Phoenix. Exact same kind of building, exact same kind of obstructed view seats would be involved. It'd be about a 12 to 13,000 seat facility, which is really not much different than the Colisée in the short term.
So you guys would entertain that in theory?
Again, it's to the same extent we'd entertain the Colisée.
And the Colisée isn't a perfect building by any stretch of the imagination, but we know you can put an ice surface in there without restrictions. And if they do $30 million worth of renovation, presumably it'd be okay for a couple of years? Is that too big a presumption?
Sure. I mean, I'm not gonna argue with that. But I wouldn't assume that they can't put an ice facility in Key Arena either.
The commissioner also said he has received interest from Saskatoon, among other cities. I spent yesterday on the telephone doing an interview with some people in Saskatoon who were most intrigued by the prospect. Should we categorize that as anything, or is this just one of those things that goes on a regular basis? Every once in a while, the phone rings and somebody says, hey, I'd like a team for fill in the blank town.
I'd say more the latter. I mean, look, we take those phone calls, we take those meetings, and you know, we were just talking about Seattle and Quebec City. I mean, there are other cities who, over the course, particularly of the CBA, have expressed interest, and other potential owners who have expressed interest in owning teams in particular cities. So, I mean, I'm not sure I would narrow the field necessarily in the short term to two cities. I think there's a possibility of there being more, but again, you know, I don't want to also make this sound like it's something that's preordained here. I can say with certainty that 100% of our efforts continue to be on getting something done in Phoenix, and while obviously we listen to expressions of interest, we have not had discussions with respect to the possibility of moving the Coyotes to any other city to this point in time.
What would be the drop-dead date for Phoenix if you decided to move them?
I think I alluded to that before. I mean, obviously there has to be a time frame, and I think I would acknowledge that time frame, because of the nature of the Winnipeg opportunity and the infrastructure that was built in Winnipeg, I think we had a little more luxury of time than we might have if we were forced to make that decision again this year. But there's no hard and fast date.
Could Quebec support be ready in time for next season, in your opinion, based on what you know?
You know what? I don't know enough to make that determination, because we haven't looked at it in that context to this point.
Has the success of the Jets and the amount of revenue they've been able to drive in a market that size changed the conversation in any way in terms of looking at alternate markets?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I would start by saying no, but I would clarify that or perhaps modify it by it certainly adds credence to the theory that you can have a successful NHL franchise in a relatively small market.
With a relatively small arena.
Right.
Yeah.
Well.
Which I think was a theory, certainly it was a theory on which the board made a decision to relocate a franchise back to Winnipeg. I guess the experience is just gratifying in the sense that the theory, at least in year one, has proved correct.
Mr. Daly, always good of you to take time for us. We appreciate it. Hope you're all well. We hope to see you soon.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Bill. Bill Daly, the Deputy Commissioner of the National Hockey League. It's always like a puzzle. It's always like a riddle. It's always trying to connect the dots after a conversation with Mr. Daly or Mr. Bettman. Now I don't talk to Mr. Bettman anymore, but it always used to be. You know, you sit there afterwards and you go, all right, what the hell did he say?
Well, here's one thing, Bob. It's March the 20th. I don't think the NHL is going to operate a team in Glendale next year. I think they're not going to say we absolutely will not do that, but I certainly think that's the intent.
I think there was no indication in what he said that they will.
Okay, so they need, in theory, to get a deal done in Phoenix, you have to have an owner appear, and you have to negotiate the very tricky political waters of Arizona, including the Glendale Institute. You don't have time.
And you have to do it by July.
That's, well, latest.
Latest.
Very, very latest, okay? So you have an owner has to appear, a deal has to be put on the table, it has to go through the political process, such as it is in Glendale, although Glendale's council or whatever they call it there is a bit of a joke. But the Goldwater Institute are sitting there quite anxious to sue and to throw a wrench into the works, right?
Right.
So that, which would, you know, I would think could effectively shut that down. Well, you know, it might be able to effectively shut down. The court would decide, but it's not simple. It's not, this is not a kind of plug and play situation. You just plug a team in there and it's going to be fine, or you plug a deal in. There is a third party involved. So I think it would be a heck of a challenge between March the 20th and the beginning of next season to come up with an owner, come up with a deal, get it through the political process in Glendale, make sure the financing was in place, make sure it wasn't another phony baloney owner, and then do an end run or cut a deal. We can't cut a deal with the Goldwater Institute because they don't cut deals. That's a lot to do in the next two or three months.
Well, which brings us back to my synopsis, and every indication that I have, both publicly and privately, is that the Phoenix Coyotes will play in Quebec next year.
Yeah.
Period. End of story.
Well, the Quebec Or in their annual report suggested very strongly that they believe they're going to get a team.
Mr. Obu on this program, some of the things that he said, the fact that the television network that Mr. Peladeau has under his control, under Quebec Or's control, has been hiring people for the purpose of with experience in broadcasting, telecasting hockey.
And everything I got to say, the other thing is everything I know about the Key Arena and everything I've seen, you know, all of the, you know, including pictures of what it looked like when there was an ice surface in there. The Key Arena is not the Colisée. The Colisée would be a small, slightly down at the heels NHL arena. The Key Arena is a basketball arena where you have to stick the ice in at one end. It's off center. The scoreboard would be over one of the goals. And 12,000, I think, is optimistic. You know, everybody that I've talked to said maybe 8,000, 9,000.
Yeah, with due respect to Mr. Daly, who made it sound almost as if neither one of them is ideal. The truth is that neither one is ideal, but Quebec is way better.
And there is an arena deal done in Quebec, barring the success of one remaining legal challenge. So, you know, it's not a lot of risk in Quebec
and an arena deal that's done where the hockey team would be the primary tenant and controlling tenant, as opposed to in Seattle, where it's a basketball facility that if they got a hockey team, they'd also bring that in.
Yes.
And I'm not saying that those deals don't exist. There's plenty of those deals out there. But if you're the National Hockey League, there's a lot more there in Quebec City than there is in Seattle right now.
Well, I think you can look at Quebec City and imagine that it's Winnipeg. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, and what did they do with Winnipeg? They whispered to Winnipeg months before, get ready and don't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
Have they whispered the same thing to Monsieur Peladeau and Monsieur Obu and the folks in Quebec?
Well, Mr. Peladeau and Mr. Obu are not quite as good at staying quiet as Mark Chipman and David Thompson were.
Well, they aren't, but I'm quite certain that they were ordered to. Here's what you do. Don't tell anybody. We'll see. 22 past the hour. This is Prime Time on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius and Sportsnet. 29 past the hour, Prime Time on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius and Sportsnet in high definition. Bob McCallum, Stephen Brentner, Toronto Studios. Today, Graham James was sentenced to 2 years in prison for sexual abuse. In the eyes of the defense, it was more than what they'd asked for. In the eyes of the prosecution, it was less than what they'd asked for. I believe they were asking for 6 years. Was it not that not accurate?
I believe so, yeah.
And it falls somewhere in the middle, and maybe that's what should have been expected. Greg Gilhooly was one of the victims of Graham James' sexual abuse, and he joins us on the telephone today. Greg, this is, I'm sure, a difficult day. Did you have any expectations about what would happen in court today? Are you satisfied with the proceedings and what has come of this?
Look, I think what happened in court today is it's disappointing. It shouldn't be unexpected given our legal system. If anyone thought that Graham James was ever going to get justice through the court process, I think they were mistaken.
So, but in terms of the possible penalties, and I know there's lots of people who would like to see Graham James locked away forever and all kinds, but really in the range of possibilities within the law, this, as Bob said, this kind of went down the middle between what the prosecution and the defense were asking for, didn't it, Greg?
Well, it did and it didn't. I mean, It fell between what each side was asking for, but it certainly didn't come close to what the victims were seeking. And I guess the difficult thing, I'm a lawyer, and so I'm both a victim and a lawyer, and the lawyer in me understands what happened. The victim in me questions why assaulting someone for 3 years counts as one assault and assaulting someone for one night counts as one assault. I truly do grapple with that concept. Our criminal code isn't built to deal with monsters like Graham James. And so I'm not at all surprised by what happened today.
Greg, I think for people who are, just coming to your part of this story, I wonder if you could just in a few minutes here, tell us how you are connected into this story, because you're the charges. You're not one of the complainants in terms of the charges you were.
I was a complainant in terms of the charges, but my charges were stayed.
Exactly.
When Graham was out on bail and effectively held all the cards. I was abused back in 79, 80, 81, 82 before I went away to Princeton. And when Sheldon came forward, I was not nearly ready to come forward. And when Theo came out with his book, Theo Fleury came out with his book, I was already in therapy and dealing with this. So that kicked up a second round of judicial process that I was ready to participate in. And my story is very much a he said, he said. I don't have stories of taking trips to Disneyland with another person who was being abused at the same time. I was the easiest one for Graham to drop and the most productive one for Graham to drop. The allegations with respect, and not allegations, the proven charges with respect to Todd and Theo relate to abuse that took place at the same time as what Graham was convicted for with Sheldon and another unnamed player. That left the defense with the ability to say that, look, Graham was a bad person during this time. He's already done time in jail for when he was a bad person in this time, and in totality, he should only get this many years. If I'd been in the mix, it would have been a different situation, creating an effective stream of abuse over a much longer time.
Why was the decision made to stay the charges that it would have involved you?
Well, it's a difficult process. I mean, only in Canada can a convicted serial pedophile voluntarily come back from Guadalajara, the Latin American pedophile capital, and earn brownie points and get bail. Once Graham had bail, it made it very difficult for the Crown to do anything. Graham held all the cards. He could sit out there and say, look, I'm going to plead guilty to X and Y, but not Z. And then the Crown faced the decision. Do we call his bluff and go to trial, or do we accept the deal? And in the end, the Crown decided that, look, convictions against two rather than three probably wouldn't get very much more time for the third. We'd have to go through a trial. No guarantee that all of those guys are going to stand up and go through the trial. And most importantly, the Crown didn't want to be in a position where it would have to call witnesses against their own wishes. And those witnesses, in many respects, would have been victims themselves.
I know this is great. This is a tough, you know, maybe, it's, and I'm not sure this is a fair question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. When Sheldon Kennedy had come forward and showed a lot of courage and accused Graham James of doing what he did, if Theo and if you and if all of the victims had come forward at the same time, would the scenario have been different?
Oh, absolutely. And that's one of the tough things that I deal with in therapy. That's why the first couple of times I met Sheldon Kennedy, I couldn't look him in the face. It's one of the reasons why I was suicidal at the time. I spiraled down when Sheldon came forward because I wasn't man enough to deal with things at that time. I wasn't prepared. I wasn't ready. And I let everyone down. And I thought I'd effectively enabled Graham James by not being there for him. The real hero in this is Sheldon Kennedy. I mean, remember what Sheldon was like. Sheldon was a broken man who was easy to point at as someone possibly making up a story, who was broken himself, and who was going to believe Sheldon, this guy. And at worst, it was probably in many people's mind a consensual relationship. Many people in the hockey world rallied behind Graham James back then. The world was a different place back then, and yet Sheldon had the guts to take this on by himself. He is one remarkable man, and what he has done in standing up and turning his life around and trying to make things better, it's unspeakably good what he has done.
With Greg Gilhooly, from a legal perspective, before we go, the concerns that you have over the legal system, the process here, and the subsequent sentencing that took place today, is there any chance that this process and the profile of this case can result in any adjustments, alterations, changes to the laws in Canada that will allow the system to punish somebody like Graham James in the manner that you believe he deserves to be punished?
You know, you've hit upon absolutely the right point. The worse this got in this high-profile situation, the better things will get for everybody on a go-forward basis in a number of ways. First, the fact that this has been so high profile is desensitizing the issue so that those who are being abused can come forward and know that the person perpetrating the crime is going to be convicted. Let's not forget, Graham tonight will put his head on a pillow in a penitentiary, and my bed linens are going to be far better than his. Secondly, I think this has shone a bright light on what can happen in the courtroom. I mean, Graham got credit today for the public outrage that he faces for what he did to young boys. And the judge said that the effectively the scarlet letter that he wears on a go-forward basis is such penalty that that kind of counts as jail time, too, so we should reduce his jail time, give him a bit of credit for that. That is absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
And the judge also says that, look, Graham hasn't been convicted for anything since he got out of jail the last time. Let's leave aside the fact that he went and tried to coach young kids in Spain under the radar and then ended up in Montreal, Canada's pedophile capital, and then ended up in Guadalajara, which is where the American pedophiles race off to. Common sense never entered into the legal process, and that's why I say that I'm of two minds here. I'm a lawyer and I'm a victim. And as a lawyer, I get the judge gets full marks and A-plus on her legal paper. Tick that box, tick that box, tick that box. Followed the legal rules to a T. Graham James gets 2 years. In my world, Graham James gets 2 years? Come on. I'm not saying we lock him up and throw away the key, but I'm saying 2 years. In our system, he's home for Christmas dinner, and he very well may be on the golf course by the end of golf season.
Is there the prospect of this changing? Will you take a leading role in trying to change the laws of this country so that this cannot be repeated?
Absolutely. I mean, if one thing has come out of this process in terms of my own healing, it's that there's more to life than corporate law, as lucrative as it may be. This area requires a lot of heavy lifting. And this omnibus crime bill that the Tory government just got through with a lot of opposition and a lot of criticism for some of the things contained in it. And I don't personally necessarily agree with everything in it, but finally we have some pushback within the system and certainly with respect to those who prey upon children where things are turning around and we can't just look at the rights of the criminal, especially when it comes to those who prey upon children. But even to get the minor changes that moved through, Sheldon has been doing heavy lifting for 15 years. The Justice Minister and the Harper government gets raked over the coals for being American this and fascist that. We need to pull together and all work to make better laws in this area, and so we will.
Greg, well said. Thank you very much for joining us today, and best of luck as you continue to pursue some changes in the legal system that I think everybody that's logical, everybody that knows this story, even superficially, agrees there have to be changes. We wish you well with that. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for having me.
Greg Gilhooly, he was a victim of Graham James' sexual abuse. He was in Winnipeg today, I believe.
He was there for the sentencing, yeah.
For the sentencing, and Graham James got 2 years.
And as I say, he just, Sheldon Kennedy, everybody remember Sheldon Kennedy out there. Sheldon Kennedy stood alone.
Yep.
Alone. And the hockey world, some of the hockey world rallied around Graham James. They tried to cut the legs out from Sheldon Kennedy. They attacked his credibility. You know, think about that guy. You know, and God love what Theo's done and everybody else has done here. But Sheldon Kennedy stood alone.
He was the guy. We'll take the break. We'll come back with more. Primetime will continue on the Fan Radio Network, Sirius, and Sportsnet. Thirteen before the hour, McCowan and Brunton, Toronto. Here's our friend Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette. Hello, Boone. How are you?
Hey, Bob. Fine, thank you.
You guys in Montreal, I mean, it's, you know, you got a different story every day. Last time we talked, I think we were talking about Patrick Roy would never come back to Montreal. He'll be the head coach of the Quebec Nordiques, who we now believe will be there by September. But in Montreal, the story is now he's the next head coach of the Canadiens.
That is a story in Montreal. I hesitate to attack the credibility of Martin Leclerc, who's a very good journalist.
And, but,
you know, he's not some schmuck on Twitter, you know. But, you know, we don't have any confirmation of it. It's not, if it's a done deal, it's not terribly logical, considering that they don't have a new general manager yet. But I will confess that maybe what I'm telling you now is a bit of wishful thinking, because I don't think it would be a good move. I don't want to see him here.
Is that, now, Jeff, this would all have to come back to Jeff Molson at some level, wouldn't it, Mike? And that if they are going to, well, they are going to clean house and rebuild this thing from scratch, does that sound like a Jeff Molson move to you?
It's hard to say. Jeff Molson has kept such a low profile since he bought the team. He is so cautious. I think his most his greatest manifestation of personality in public was the craven admission that that they'd made a terrible mistake and that Randy Cunningworth was an interim coach, thus, you know, crippling his head coach for the last 50 games of the season. So it's hard to get a read on him. But I have trouble believing that he went off and negotiated a one-to-one deal and that it's signed, sealed, and delivered that Patrick is going to be here and that it's going to be announced after the Rompar are done their junior run.
See, that was, again, I've had limited dealings with Jeff Molson, but I have, you know, I've broken bread with him, and he would not hit me as an impulsive guy. Let's put it that way.
Would a non-impulsive guy hire a guy who's, you know, impulsive is his middle name? That's another thing.
And understanding the nuclear explosion that it would have set off on. I'm not saying he won't do it, but, you know, I think Jeff Molson spent a lot of time listening to Bob Gainey and to Pierre Gauthier and to, you know, for better or for worse in the last year and a bit, and I just have a hard time seeing him going rogue and saying, I'm going to bring in Patrick Roy and then we'll figure out the general manager later.
Exactly. And I just, you know, Stephen, I just think he's the wrong guy for the job. If you count Carey Price as your most precious asset, which they do, if you look at Carey Price's history of a not terribly good, in fact, a lousy relationship with Roland Melanson when he was the goaltender coach here, I you know, imagine him playing under a goaltending legend. Plus, I don't think the team needs Sideshow Patrick to sell tickets or to enliven things at the Bell Center. I think they need a few better players and a healthy year from the players they've got, and then maybe things will get interesting. Nor do they need a rookie head coach. You know, we've had bad experiences with that in the past. Patrick Roy has no coaching experience at the NHL level.
With Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette. So, and you know this because you and I have talked about this on at least a couple of occasions. I mean, the whispers I have been hearing for months is that Petrick is going to stay in Quebec City and eventually coach next door to the Pepsi Center in this new arena for Peladeau and the return of the Quebec Nordique whenever that happens. And that was sort of etched in stone. But tell me about, you know, if that's not happening, and we have no reason to believe it's not, but if that's not happening, what is Patrick in Montreal? How often is he back? Does he get the adulation that is respective of the early part of his career? Are there hard feelings? What is Patrick in Montreal these days?
He is a star of a lesser magnitude than the Richard Béliveau, Lafleur,
gotcha,
legendary Canadiens. For the longest time, the enduring image of him was, you know, stomping past Ronald Corey and
right. Basically
waltzing his ass right out of town. There was a rehabilitation where you know, they buried the hatchet.
Around the time
of the back to retire
jersey
his number.
Retire,
yeah. It was a wonderful evening, but, you know, nobody cried during the ceremony. I don't think he's got the juice here that he does in his native Quebec City. I'll put it that way.
I was there for that jersey, there for the retirement, and it was, you're right, Mike, it was a strangely, I think people had kind of anticipated something operatic because of how he'd left, and this was going to be the great reconciliation, and it was kind of flat.
Yeah.
You know,
plus, by the standards of Montreal.
By the standards,
you
know, of Montreal.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you have to have the grand entrance scene from Aida to make it a proper hockey evening, well, you know. Complete with elephants, ideally. You know?
Well, there's no 11-minute ovation, right, which is the gold standard in Montreal.
No, not even close.
No ovation, no dancing girls, no...
They do it big in Montreal. They do ceremony well in Montreal.
We do, yeah.
Were there fireworks? I can't remember if there were fireworks.
Nope.
No fireworks.
Sacrificed a couple virgins, threw them into the volcano.
Yeah, we've all done that.
Royal, but that's, you know, that's standard issue. You know?
We've all done that, you know.
Yeah. I'll do that when Brian Gionta leaves. That's, you know, that's nothing.
And on any given Friday night. Mr. Boone, we'll watch with great interest to see whether he do or he don't. We are all, I guess, of the belief that there's a greater chance he don't.
I'm of that position.
Michael Boone of the Montreal Gazette. What position are you of?
Well, I always cheer for the story. You know, I still can't get the newspaper guy out of me. We cheer for the story, and it would be a great story. But I don't.
Is it a better story than he stays in Quebec and takes over the NHL team there?
That one's pretty good, too. But Montreal is... is still the vortex of a whole bunch of things.
Here's what I see. I have this vision. It came to me in a dream. Pepsi Center here, where the Quebec Rampart play. The new arena here, where the Quebec Nordique will play. Side by each, like a pair of eggs on the plate. And there is Patrick Roy. One night he coaches there. The next night he coaches here. The next night he coaches there. His greatness is supreme. He will coach both teams. Don't bet against it. Thanks to Bill Daly, Greg Gilhooly, Michael Boone for joining us. Smell you tomorrow.